Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on that zero emission future that we all hope for. Every week I have one of the wonderful team from the EV Cafe, and this week, we've got Sarah, yay!
Oh, it's unlucky for some. Well, it makes sense because, as we will find out, I've known Ash for quite some time, all the stories.
Ooh, all the stories and all the goss. So, which leads us on to... We get joined every week by one of the wonderful entrepreneurs, collaborators, pioneers and innovators in our business. And this week we have an entrepreneur with a capital E. We've got the wonderful Ashley Tate. Ash, welcome to you.
Thanks, Paul. Thank you.
It's our pleasure and our privilege. But Ash, listen, I know that you've been... running businesses since you were 15 years old. We'll come on to that first business in a bit. What are you doing today? What is the deal? What have you set up?
So my official title is MD of All Star Charge Pass. So essentially that is everything to do with electric charging within All Star. But yes, there is a story behind how I kind of got this role.
and actually, so we met, I remember, back in my days when I was at Vanarama, and
yes.
We were trying to solve the problem of businesses sending vehicles home and paying that bill so that we didn't create driver poverty or bill creep or all those kinds of things. Ash, talk us how this business that you began that then got bought by FleetCor, or as we will know them, All Star. How did that business start and how did you get to where you are?
Yeah, okay. So there is a story. Some people may find it interesting. Some people might not. So I guess the initial concept of MENA, as it was called at the time, came from a previous business that I was running. So I... long story short, I had a business called Split the Bills. It was all around helping mainly students who lived in a house share and pay for the bills. And while I was running that business, I started to take it like an interest in EV because I was thinking, this is the next thing in energy that's going to be, I guess, an opportunity to make money more than anything. But EV was coming. So then it was about, okay, right, within this space, where's the opportunity? And the first... idea I had was all around consumers and how consumers would pay for charging at home. But after some time of trying to explore that idea, there was not just myself involved in MENA, by the way, there was myself and Chris and Andy, there was three founders. We realized that actually the real opportunity in EV charging was in fleet. Now, having nothing about fleet, all we knew was that vehicles that are traditionally charged, or even today, charge at a petrol station, were going to end up going home with drivers and being charged at home on their own driveway. And what appeared to be creating a lot of noise, just from reading sort of the Fleet Press, never heard of Fleet News before, and suddenly started reading this wonderful magazine called Fleet News, discovered that actually, how are these businesses going to keep paying for essentially electricity that is actually going through a home owner's or the person who lives in the home energy bill? And from all the experience I had at Split the Bills, I realized, well, there's a way we can do this, right? We can pay these suppliers directly. We can create integrations. We can replicate the fuel card experience in a EV world and still allow these people to be charging at home. So it's probably not the short story, but that is the long story.
Well, I remember exactly where I was when that happened. And I remember saying to Chris Pritchett at the time, who was my boss, and he and I both worked at for Anstey, and I'd met this person called Ash, and he is of Split the Bill fame. And I remember Split the Bills when it was in existence, and I remember thinking what an absolutely brilliant idea that was. And MENA, which is spelled MINA, was something that nobody, including us, had ever thought of. And we were running the energy and infrastructure team at the law firm. And we were trying to think about how we could help someone like you with this brilliant idea, sort of help the industry. It wasn't long after that. I think that was 2019. Of course, EV Cafe was born 2020. We got you on to talk all about it. And I'll never forget that episode because, like I say, it was a proper pioneer moment where we all just thought, wow, someone has connected the dots in a way that nobody has, as far as we could tell before. And then, of course, it's quite nice knowing there's a full circle situation here now, because now you sit here as the MD of Charge Pass, All-Star Charge Pass. Some years later, what's that, 5 years later now? And you are one of our, very proud to be one of our sponsors of the EV Cafe. So it's just wonderful to still be supporting your mission and your journey. And I think we should really talk about the Charge Pass. It's pretty awesome because it combines that technology that you talked about there, but with the on-the-go sort of fuel card experience. Hit me, three main outcomes of the Charge Pass, if I recall.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I think, well, like you said, Mina, that was the home solution. And, just credit that, I guess thanks to the EV Cafe, because you were our first platform, really. I think without the EV Cafe, we probably wouldn't have got the, I don't know, just got out there, really. You helped us get out there. So thank you for that. But yeah, now we are Charge Pass, and Charge Pass is far more than just home charging. We have the card. Single card allows you to pay for charging on the public network. Today, it's the largest network dedicated to business. So we have 51,000 charge points and growing. And the whole mission around All-Star Charge Pass is how do we help fleets go from this fuel environment, petrol, diesel, into EV, where there's inevitably going to be a crossover because most fleets aren't going from 100% fuel to 100% EV. So we offer both fuel, on-road charging and at-home charging, and soon to be workplace charging, all under one umbrella.
Well, and Ash, I mean, it is a very comprehensive offer. I mean, I remember our conversation recently where you outlined, the size of the network that you've built. And it does seem that you're very focused on really pushing the boundaries of what's possible. And so, kind of going into that whole world, a corporate world, where you basically brought your brilliant idea and you've maximized the progress, I think, and really focused the mindset of a larger corporate to really react to the marketplace and go, guys, we've got to get this done. This, we need to engage with Tesla. We need to engage with ChargePoint Scotland. We need to engage with GridServe and other big charge point operators. I'm sure Osprey, InstaVolt, and all those good guys as well. So it's a very driven mindset, isn't it?
Yes, I think so. Or maybe a naive mindset, I don't know. But yeah, what
But there's an engine room, isn't there?
yeah, absolutely. Well, I think nothing's impossible until it's proven to be impossible, right? But generally, I think if you go back to the like it's the idea of like first principles, right? Like what's actually stopping you? Well, nothing really. Just just the ability to think, well, if I can get this guy to say yes, then that's it, done, right? The technical aspect of delivering this product is, yeah, it's technical, but it's not impossible. It's more just relationships and either getting people to say yes or not getting people to say no is probably the other side of the coin.
See, I know you quite well, and I think it's about the questions you ask. I've seen you in action, knowing the right questions to ask, and then that leads to a bit of a no-brainer decision. So the yes or no becomes an obvious pathway. And I remember we were recently all at the AFP annual conference thing. And we were filming for you. We were filming your announcement video as a sponsorship. Best bit. The way you operate is so wonderful because it's always with an element of humor. And you get out this gigantic card, this gigantic version of what will be the pocket-sized RFID card, and
Absolutely.
showed us how easy it was. And you guys went off to Tesla. And I agree with Paul. It's that vision that you have. And that's why you're a brilliant MD. And I think personally, it comes down to your mindset that Paul asked you about, that driven mindset. Is probably quite directly linked to your sporting ability as well. The fact that you have big challenges, and I know that you're a runner, you're a climber, We share a love of the great outdoors, and you're lucky enough to live near the Peak District, I believe. Your address is not available. And even just this week, I took part in, obviously, we have crowned the new Woman of the Year for 2024, and I delivered a session for a couple of hours, actually, with the Cox Automotive Group and partners about how you can have that mindset and what you can do to remove what we called limiting beliefs. Do you possess any limiting beliefs now?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I kind of have this idea that almost anything's possible as long as you just focus on what you need to do to make it possible, right? But then I like to think I'm not deluded, right? As there are certain things that may be, you know, completely unachievable. But I think, yeah, certainly with EV and what we've done here, or where we've got to today, is it's more around, well, most people only look forward based on what they've done in the past, whereas I think you've kind of got to ignore the fact that, you know, that what's happened has happened. And the fact that I came into this business knowing nothing about fleet or, to be honest, even fuel cards, other than the fact that fuel cards existed, was probably really helpful in the early days, because we're brave enough, or just didn't know what we didn't know. So tried stuff that people in the industry said, no, that won't work, that can't happen, you can't do it that way. But most of it is only perception, it's not reality. So we were able to come into this going, right, okay, well, this is what we want, this is what we achieve. And even when we put the initial plan together of where we were going to be in 5 years, I mean, we were wildly off, you know, where we thought we were going to go this direction and we ended up going this direction. And I think that's all part of it. You've just got to know when you've got it wrong as well and when to stop, because I think when we stopped a lot of things, you know, we have in the office here, actually behind me, we have a wall of fail. So all the things that we've failed at, because I think you've got to celebrate the stuff that goes wrong as well, because you learn from it. And also, if you hadn't have said no or stopped it, then we would never have got to where we are today if we'd have, I guess, carried on in the wrong direction.
Ash, this mindset is fascinating to me, because, listen, at 15 years old, well, I don't dare tell you what I was doing, actually. I was into all kinds of mischief and getting everything the wrong way up. But you saw an opportunity to build a business. Or, I mean, build a business sounds very grand. You probably saw an opportunity to make some money as a young man. What was it that got this 15-year-old Ash to take that punt? What? How did you get there?
Well,
at 15.
Yeah, I think most of the inspiration at that age came from my dad. So he worked for himself. He was self-employed. He did all sorts of stuff, from working the markets to investing in property, but I don't ever remember when I was at school thinking, I'm going to stay and do my A-levels and go to university. It was pretty much, for as long as I can remember, I always thought, I just want to have my own business. And I hadn't really any idea what that was going to be, but I just remember being quite confident about that. And when I look back, I think that was, if my daughter probably said the things that I said when I was 12, I'd probably think, oh gosh, this is not going to end well. But but yeah, so I think there was this first business at 15, it was nearly 16, but I was finished school in the summer, and I saw this opportunity to essentially sell these like little mini motorbikes, right? They were the craze at the time. It was like around the micro scooter time, but these things had engines. Pretty dangerous, really, when you look back. They didn't, you know, it was a fad. But yeah, we when I say we, so my dad helped me kind of get started, because I wasn't even old enough to open a bank account, or certainly a business account. But long story short, ended up buying best part of 800 or nearly 1,000 of these bikes over a period from August to about Christmas. We were getting them delivered, storing them in a local self-storage place, had UPS turn up on my drive every day where I'd package them up and send them out. And I thought, oh, this is great. Like, business is easy. Like, maybe I should, anyway, it turned out it wasn't so easy because then, there's VAT to pay and all that kind of stuff that I hadn't really accounted for. And anyway, so that was a good experience. I thought I'd made loads of money. Turned out I'd probably not made any money because of all the things I hadn't, thought about. And then the market dried up after Christmas. But, that kind of gave me that, right, what's next? Like, got to do something else. I just didn't want to go and work for anybody. I did end up going to work for somebody, in fact. So for a few years, I spent various different, days, if you like, weeks, months. It turned into about 2 years jumping around, I suppose what you can say is chain restaurants. Last of those was TGI Fridays, where I actually met my wife. So that worked out all right. Oh. But yeah, I mean, that was good experience. That was just good, I guess, grounded in like, this is hard work, right? Hospitality is hard work. And it was kind of a long set, but I was desperate to get out. I was desperate to think, right, I can't do this forever, but it was enough to live off. And then the next business that I started just kind of was funded really from me being able to live at home, which was like kind of nice, having no kids, just no, if it all went wrong, like what was the worst that could happen? Like nothing.
Mm.
So it does make it easier to start a business when you're young, I think.
I like how you said, Paul said, oh, you're 15, and you went, oh, well, no, I was nearly 16.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out, I hadn't, like, left.
Go on.
I had left school, I hadn't skipped the last year of
I remember those scooters. They are horrendous. I'm not surprised that the market dried up after that. And we saw just yesterday a good friend of the EV Cafe, Joe Dean Hedger from Vital EV, shared something on his LinkedIn about a funny looking skateboard thing that's essentially a briefcase sized personal electric car, comes in at $1,000, and it has these awful little wheels on it that you'd expect to find on an office chair. And I just love the fact that today someone just like 15, 16 year old Ash is thinking, I'm going to get a ton of them and sell them between summer and Christmas and make my millions. And then, yeah, quite right. You start to learn business practice. You start to learn the good and the bad. And I absolutely love your fail wall. I think that is brilliant. Mm. I really think every business and every person should probably have one. I'm fascinated by this experience you had where you met your wife and you touched on your daughter as well. You now have a daughter. Congratulations. And that's lovely to see your family expanding. Do you and your wife share a similar entrepreneurial spirit?
No, is probably the the simple answer. And that probably works quite well. So interestingly, I was talking about this with someone just this morning, because I said, like, she's just very relaxed, which is probably a very good thing, because I think if we were both like me, then that probably would probably just end in disaster. So she kind of just lets me get on with it, and, doesn't really matter what I say I'm going to do next. It's like, yeah, okay, you do what you want to do. That's fine. Just don't sell the house, and we're, as long as we're, yeah. So,
but is it, so it seems like it's a partnership that is yin and yang. I mean, what do you do? Because obviously you must have a lot of shared interests. Does that where you cross over in the sporty area, or is it where, what is that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she's very sporty, into fitness and that kind of stuff. But I think I think it works because, I probably have done stuff, certainly in the last 5 or 10 years, that most people would think is crazy. And, from a personal perspective as well as from like a business perspective, it's, and it hasn't always been good, right? So leading up to when I was 30, we had various different businesses, always doing something else. Three of them went bust, essentially, big time. One of them spectacularly, as in, everything we'd made, we reinvested, and then it all just imploded. So I remember, like, on my 30th birthday thinking, oh, I just need to get a job. This is not working out. And then I guess between 30 and 35, I built three businesses, one including MENA, and sold them. So it kind of turned around very quickly. But in some ways, having failed spectacularly three times really helps you get it right, because you know what to not do more than anything.
And actually, on that, if you could give, and you know, because I've started my own business, right? I don't ever see a day where it'll get bought by Fleek or anybody else, come to that. But what advice would you give yourself, or to give anybody that is in business? I mean, you know, be willing to fail seems like one of the pieces of advice that you should kind of impart. But what else would you say? Because it's clear that you've got, one, the drive, but two, that real passion to overcome and, you know, deal with failure. What else?
It's hard, isn't it? Because I think it's not like there's a secret recipe to being successful. And I said to someone the other day, if you'd have done everything we did at MENA exactly the same, literally everything, but done it a year later, it may not be successful, right? So timing is sometimes just everything.
Yeah.
But you've got to have a bit of, well, I think the one thing that I see a lot of early stage businesses forget is that a business only survives if it's generating money, right? And it's a bit harder now, quite easy to raise money from investors, but investment is a one-hit wonder, it will dry up, whereas revenue is essentially oxygen, right? So you need revenue. Mm. And I think a lot of people forget that. I know that sounds obvious, but I see so many people focused on building a great product and forget that they need to sell it. And and I think the other thing is you've just got to have a bit of awareness as to what's working and what's not, and try to constantly challenge, like, what you've got to be positive, but you've got to try and be realistic and say, okay, you can't just pursue this relentlessly and say, if I just keep working hard, it will be successful, because that's not always going to be the case. Like, you've got to think, right, is this working? What can make it better? Like, almost prove that it's not going to work, because if you can prove that it's not going to work, and you can't, or if you can't prove it's not going to work, then you've got a pretty successful business, right? But yeah, try not to get too caught up with your own excitement around something, and try and keep yourself grounded, which I'm not so good at, right? But I've got two founders that are very good at that. So two other co-founders that are very good at bringing us back down to life, but to earth.
I was very lucky yesterday to be in London again. Paythrough is based all over the country, but we often meet in London. And we went out with some of our investor colleagues or whatever. And there was a big debate, a very healthy debate, but it lasted quite a while, about whether it's more important to invest in a good product or more important to invest in a good person. Mm-hmm. And I think we settled on it being the person. Because the product is, of course, relevant, absolutely right. And the business plan needs to be relatively sound. But they all agreed they'd sooner invest in somebody who had, a bit like Dragon's Den, really, you know, you've got 20 minutes in the den, and, you know, they always say the same thing. They scribble on the notepads and they film on the money on the side of the chair. And then they ultimately just say, I believe in you. Please give me 50% of your business for £10,000. And I wanted to bring up your co-founders of MENA at the time, and of course the people you're surrounded with now at Allstar, and as MD you've probably got quite a bit of responsibility for growing and building that team. I want to know from you what qualities you're looking for in people to surround you to make Allstar Charge Pass such a success.
Yes, it's an interesting question, and I think you're absolutely right. Like, it's people, it's not the product, you know. I mean, there are products that are just unstoppable, but even so, they didn't get there by just being good products, right? It's all about the people. And I think the one thing that's interesting about Allstar is, while it's a massive business, it's still quite entrepreneurial, and it doesn't have layer after layer like... I mean, I've never really worked in a big corporate, but from what I understand, some big corporates just have layer after layer after layer of people that probably don't feel like they get anything done. Whereas in Allstar, people do get stuff done. And one of the values we had in MENA was be pioneering. And the kind of meaning behind that was like, just find a way. Like, it doesn't matter. Don't say, you know, I don't know, or I don't know how. Like, find a way. Because if you've got that attitude and you've got that personality trait that is like, okay, we've got a challenge, there's got to be a way through this, that just changes everything, I think, across almost any, well, it doesn't matter what level you are in the business, whether you know, you've just joined, you know, fresh out of university, or whether you've been there 25 years, if people there are trying to get stuff done and find a way and make things just happen. You know, totally different kind of topic, but I was listening to a podcast the other day, and the guy was talking, and he said, like, if you want to go for a walk, the first thing you've got to do is put your shoes on, right? So doesn't matter what's going on, put your shoes on and something will happen, right? If you don't put your shoes on, you're never gonna leave the house.
Ash, I kind of get the feeling you were born with your shoes on, you know, you were as ready. And, you know, as we've gone through, I kind of feel like I'm faced with this hugely consistent person, this person that just doesn't deviate, even through failure, even through difficulty. And I'm really curious as to what has stopped you in your tracks in life. Because, and it doesn't necessarily need to be a business thing, right? And we like to kind of talk about the human element here. What has stopped you in your tracks? Clearly you're here and you're incredibly robust, incredibly consistent, and we see a very steady person. It sounds like your wife might see a different aspect to you from time to time. But talk to me about a time that's really stopped you in your tracks and caused you to really have to dig deep. And what did that moment feel like for you? And how did you get beyond it?
Yeah, interesting. Maybe it's hard. Like, I feel like running any business is hard, but running a startup is really hard. Like, it's, and I definitely think it teaches you to be resilient. But I think the time when it was like, oh, this is bad, you know, and to the point where I think I was definitely depressed and just didn't, I don't know, just didn't have any get up and go, was my daughter was born in 2018, August 2018. And that's the time where, again, not really touched on this in this podcast, but we'd set up an energy company. So we'd got this energy company, we got an Ofgem license, we'd put everything into this business. So everything that's what the bills have made over the previous years had gone into this business. And it was just going down the pan, so to speak. Like, so everything was, we were losing everything. And this was the point where I was like, okay, I don't know what's going to happen here, but I'm probably going to have to get a job, which was terrifying. Eva was born, you know, and it's like, oh, that was so hard. Like, I think you're kind of like emotionally all over the place. You don't sleep. Business is going to pot. Life's been turned upside down. And I was just like, I don't really know what's going on here. And it really hit me hard. And I think the one thing I would say to anybody, and it works for me, but I hear it a lot, is just keep moving. And I mean, like, physically moving. Like, I just exercised every day, and that probably kept me alive, I would say, throughout that period. And you just, yeah, and then I think you just, you know, and then eventually it just went, you know, I think that I was in that stage for probably best part of a year, and kind of got through it and thought, right, I know this is bad advice for someone who's probably feeling low or depressed, but it's like, right, just stop. Like, stop being so silly. Pull yourself together. This is where we're getting to. You know, have a goal. And ultimately, that's kind of what really got me moving again, to say, right, got to do something. I definitely cannot go back and work with somebody else. What's next?
I think having that goal is everything. Mm. Having that goal is everything. So often people don't have even that. And that's okay. You know, if that's fine, if they are happy just to say, put your shoes on and walk every day, where are you walking to? You know, if you don't have a destination, how are you ever going to get there? I actually challenge that thinking sometimes because, as you quite rightly say, you don't know what's going to happen until you leave the door. So people get very hung up. They get very hung up on having to have this goal and berating themselves if they haven't met it. Well, half the time those goals were unsustainable in the first place. And having that sort of supportive network around you as a business person to steady the boat, as it were, in those times. But what I wanted to share, and I'm sure the listeners will appreciate this, is those of us who are lucky enough to have had a family and who have had children, a lot of the focus is usually on the female counterpart, the one whose body's been through hell to produce said child. But they're saying now, they being studies, that it can take up to 3 years to normalize yourself after the birth of a child. So that's not just physical, that's mental as well. And something we're huge on in the EV Cafe is really acknowledging that mental health pathway that you end up having to go through and how a big trigger or a change in somebody's life can go one way or the other. Sometimes it's the best thing that's ever happened. And you had a compounded issue there. It's really positive to hear that movement for you was exercise. And for other people, it could be arts or culture or immersing in something that takes you away from those spiraling thoughts and as they go down and down and down. That's why I was curious about your wife, because, you know, obviously a great team. You met at TGI Fridays, I think you said, side of fries with that, know-how about a marriage. It's a fantastic, fantastic way to meet someone is when you've already got something in common. And we recently had Chris and Julie Ramsey on this podcast series. And we did not, Paul, did we expect to be sort of holding back the tears, hearing about their teamwork. And it strikes me that, you know, you see it as a good thing that you're not both entrepreneurial and that the underlying parameter here is just don't sell the house. It's absolute brilliant trust and faith. How, back in those days when they were darker than they could have been, how would you advise somebody to find that what you call movement, I just call escapism? So you were able to identify that you liked movement and it helped you. How did you know that?
It just feels good, right? I think when you're not feeling in a good place, and especially whether you're working for somebody else, whether you're in your own business or whatever you're doing, I think it's easy just to be busy being busy. You know, I hear it all the time, I'm too busy to have lunch. It's like, honestly, just have an hour off, go for a walk, do some exercise, you'll come back and you'll make up that hour twice over because you'll just be more focused and more productive, but you just never feel like doing it at the time. You know, how many people wake up at, I don't know, 6 in the morning and think, I'm going to go for a run? Like, that's the last thing you want to do. It's not really about motivation. It's just about being disciplined, I think, to say, like, if I don't do this, I'm not going to achieve this thing. I do think you've got to be disciplined with exercise. You know, and exercise doesn't have to be running. Like, walking is fine, but yeah, and like we really encourage it here at All Star. And big thing is about, you know, we're big on, I guess, just getting people to be active, because it's great for productivity and it's great for your own mental well-being, and what's more important than that?
Well, we would say very little or nothing. Because I think if you're doing anything and you're draining your mental health account, then that's the one thing, the one account that can't go down the pan, isn't it? Because, you know, we can all recount and recall stories, even this very year, where people have gone overdrawn on that account and had to check out. You know, and that is a horrible reality, isn't it? But Ash, what I'm absolutely thrilled about, and I mean this genuinely, is that it feels simple. There doesn't feel that there's a huge amount of science and research and academic. I'm not questioning any of those, by the way, but there's just this simple focus on a good idea, a lot of determination, really good teamwork and a focus on the things that support productivity, not on the productivity itself. Because it's easy to whip a horse and keep it going until it drops. But what you're saying is, no, actually just horse rest for a minute and then go again much better. And you're supporting that with all the environment. And there's a book in here somewhere, because I love the simplicity of the ecosystem that you're creating around you. And, you know, I would be thrilled to be able to work with somebody like you. And I think we've sensed this way back when we had you come on and the Evie Cafe and my work with you at Vanarama, you know, albeit we didn't really kind of make it work particularly massively, but we got things going, and there were certainly those green shoots. And it just gives me real encouragement. Yeah. I mean, is it a purposeful thing that you try to keep it simple, that you don't over-engineer it?
It is now. I think that's come through just experience and I suppose just lack of knowledge. Like, I don't think the
I love that. It's come through lack of knowledge. I'm king of that.
It's like,
sorry,
I think I think there's different paths for everybody, right? I'm not that what's worked for me will almost definitely not work for somebody else. You know, I've just never done anything in further education, but I've learned through just, I guess, what works and what doesn't, being success and failure. And I've compared this to like driving a car. Like, you can sit behind a desk and do the theory forever, but until you get behind the wheel, like, you don't really know how to drive a car. You know, it doesn't matter how much theory you've done on, you know, press the accelerator, press the brake. It's and business is a bit like that. But also, I think Mina was the first business that I had co-founders in the sense of people that were invested and, you know, owned part of the company. And that was intentional. Like, when I met Chris and Andy, I said, I want to start a business. This is what I want to do, but I'm never doing a business on my own again. This was at the point where I had, failed three times, but also had been successful twice and exited. But I was like, it's hard. Like, it's so hard being the only person. And I think you've really just got to know what you're good at and just don't get involved in what you're not good at. Just leave it to people that are much better.
Love it.
Again, even knowing what you're good at and what you're not good at is so much part of your tapestry. I love this idea of a book, though, Paul. What a great idea. I think we should call it, well, Ash, you should call it The Disciplined Man.
Well, I don't know.
And then
that.
The little subnote should be, most people only look forward based on what they've done in the past. I mean, what an incredible statement. And the whole book can be about being brave and driving forward and understanding what you're good at, what you're not good at, recognizing your failures. It would be a bestseller. It could be your next business. But don't tell All Star that. In fact, speaking of All Star, are you able to tell us what the future holds for the Charge Pass? What incredible targets are you no doubt setting yourself, and how can we all get behind you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, the whole mission behind also as a company, as a brand, is to make fueling and charging simple, right? And also, I've been doing it for years, you know, 20 plus years in fuel, and trying to bring that into EV. And I wish I had the big card on me to show you, but, you know, we've had to.
I wish you had the big card. It's very funny. People watching on YouTube, it would fill the whole screen. Absolutely. It's very
get
big.
To the website and have a look at the new branding. So we've had a complete facelift on the brand, trying to modernise it. But it's all around just having the biggest network. So we want people to be able to charge up anywhere, knowing that they don't have to look at a map. They don't have to get on any tools to think, oh, will my card work here? It was just, I can turn up at this charge point, tap my All-Star card, and know that it's going to be charged. We've got the home solution, which we're constantly building on, so there's always new features coming out around how we can make the experience better, how we can give people more transparency around the energy, the cost, the best time to charge. But then we're also doing some stuff around workplace. So workplace is the final piece of the puzzle, or as we see it today, to kind of connect the whole ecosystem. So people can charge on the road, at home, at work, and everything can be managed within the All-Star Charge Pass portal, or All-Star Online, as we call it. So that is probably all I can tell you about what's coming later this year. but yeah, at the moment,
ooh,
we're the biggest,
secret
the fastest.
Yeah, I know, yeah. I like that. I was thinking, well, come on, I want some figures, but you're right. We can probably extrapolate and guess. If you're now at, what, 51,000 charge points, you're at the mercy of the speed of transition, how many more charges go in the ground, any more emerging CPOs, charge point operators that come forward, international capabilities, and also technological capabilities. We were just discussing when I saw you last, what type of card is this? Mm. You know, we know you can tap it onto a charger, and you know you can go in and buy your ancillaries, whatever you're permitted to buy from your employer, and we know it's a monthly or two, you know, fortnightly reconciliation once a month. But as payments in the market advance, we may see another version of the charge pass coming out at some stage where it can do contactless as well with automatic VAT. You know, there could be huge advances that you guys, as a household name and a fleet trusted brand, will have to keep your eye on as well.
Absolutely, yep, can't stand still. And I think yeah, and that, you know, I don't know if this is going back a little bit, but you know, one thing that we realized at Mina was we've built a great product, right? But All-Star are huge and innovative, and it's almost like if you can't beat them, join them. They probably thought the same with us, so maybe that was just like a good synergy there. But yeah, you can't be complacent, and if anything, All-Star and their parent brand Corpay, like, they're not complacent. Whether the viewers know this or not, so they also own Plug Surfing, which is a huge roaming network in Europe, Pay by Phone, which is a payments company again across the world. If you live in certain cities where Pay by Phone is live, that's owned by Corpay. And what they're trying to do is bring all these vehicle payments companies together to try and make, whether it's charging, parking, fueling, whatever it is to do with vehicle payments, all into one place. And it's quite exciting. It's quite exciting.
It definitely is exciting, Ash. And it's a very interesting area, because I think it's one of the most frustrating things and one of the most brilliant things when I arrive at a charge point. If I have a good experience at a charge point, and by good experience, I mean a normal experience, right? So you walk up and you know, there have been challenges with paying at charge points and other stuff like that. So coming up with solutions that allow me to get out of my car, walk up to the charge, hit the card, take the plug out, plug it in that order, fairly seamlessly, then, oh boy, I'm happy. I'm sitting back in my car. I'm walking across to the appropriate outlet that is local to the charge point to get a coffee or a tea or sit and do some work. All of those things, you know, keeping stuff simple, making life easy. It just seems that's in your DNA. And it's, I love what you said. You know, don't do what you're not good at. It was really interesting. This is something that's coming up as a theme across the podcasts, is that, you know, we should focus on what we're strong at, mm-hmm. what we are good at. And so with that in mind, Ash, what does the future look like for Ash? You know, where do you go from here? And I know, you know, I don't want to get any particular secrets out, but, you know, just how do you expect to move forward in all of this?
I will start another business almost undoubtedly. I think I've thought about whether I should do that or not, but I don't know. It's exciting, right? If the most exciting time is when it's pretty chaotic and it's right at the start. And I think I've got time to do another one, so I'll regret not doing something. It probably won't be in EV or even anything to do with vehicles, but I've got some ideas.
Fantastic. I mean, the cogs are always working, aren't they? And it's just brilliant. And I'm sure you'll keep it simple. I'm sure it'll be a really clever solution to a problem. Because that's what the other thing that we're seeing time and time again come out, isn't it? That those that are successful are solving problems. You know, a good idea might not be the solution to somebody's problem.
Mm-hmm.
I think you said it earlier, focusing on a great product. But actually what you've got to do is get people paying for it. And not only pay for it if it's a solution to their problem, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the one thing I always in the back of my head, and we related this to Mina, so I didn't coin this phrase, by the way. I think this is a Jeff Bezos phrase, but it's like, what's not going to change, right? And the concept behind it is, take like Spotify, like the thing that's not changing is people are always going to listen to music. But what does Spotify do? It just makes it easier, quicker, faster, right? You don't have to go to HMV when they existed and buy a CD, and you just open your phone and download what you want. But the thing that's never changed is people still listening to music. So if you find solutions that just solve problems, just give people access to things in an easier, quicker, simpler way.
Well, there's always that added thing about how do people choose those? So the thing that doesn't change there, your example being the music industry and how people consume and buy music. The thing that doesn't change in this, we need to refuel our vehicles and we need to have cost-effective ways to reconcile that payment and keep a close eye on the books and make sure we're running profitable business.
Absolutely.
But there are competition out there. There is always going to be competition. So the real question is, how can we stand out? And I think that's what you've done with the rebranding of the Charge Pass. I think that's what you're doing by getting behind us at the EV Cafe, helping to get those messages out there and really raising the profile of new technology. And we share a similar space. Of course, I'm in payments, so we sit behind companies like yours. And I've never before seen such interest in what used to be the smaller, more ignored part of the ecosystem. People like shiny things, new chargers, new trucks, new vans, new cars, new car parks. Whereas now they're starting to realize that is not the end.
Yep, absolutely.
Good stuff. Well, Ash, this has been really fascinating, and I think the takeaways that we can have around keeping it simple, the resilience, keeping moving, not focusing on what we're not good at. We've heard that All-Star are great, and they are. And what the Charge Pass is a brilliant tool. I think we've got so much more from that as well. It does make a hell of a lot of sense when we are thinking about the future and thinking about what next, that we will need to, keep it simple, keep moving, and do great things. Ash, what final advice would you give all of those that are listening that, maybe have a dream, maybe are thinking about a business, maybe are just kind of tired with the humdrum? How would you encourage them?
Good question. I think you've got to think about what you want, right? Because I'm not going to stand here and say everyone quit the job and go and set their own business, right? Because it's hard. And it's sometimes just nice to have a salary, not have loads of pressure, have a pension, have paid holidays, all that kind of stuff. Like, honestly, it's not for everybody. But if you are going to go and pursue it, you're going to have to sacrifice stuff, right? You're not going to have a 9-to-5. You're going to be thinking about it when you probably don't want to be thinking about it. And it's hard. But if you're going to do anything, just go and do it. Don't overthink it. The worst that can happen is it'll go wrong and you'll be able to get a job again. So I would say just get started.
Well, actually, earlier you said the worst that could happen is you might have to go back and live with your mum and dad.
depends how old you are, right? Yeah. Don't remortgage your house. Don't throw everything into it. But yeah, if you want to start your own business, just do it. Just do it.
Just put your shoes on and leave the house, as we said.
Absolutely.
Yeah, very, very good.
Yeah. There's a guy on Instagram that I follow. I don't know. He's on TikTok and Insta and all this kind of guy. A guy called Simon Squibb, I think his name is. And he is an angel investor. And he walks around London saying, do you have a dream? And he just stops people in the street. Do you have a dream? What's your dream? And you know, people have said, oh, I want to become a singer. He said, right, great, sing a song then. And one of the most viral videos is a woman that didn't sing the song. She was asked the question, and she said, oh, I want to become a singer. He said, well, sing for me right now. She goes, I can't. I've got a train to catch. He said, there'll be another one along in 5 minutes. Sing a song. This will be heard by 4 million people, you know, on TikTok, or, you know, my last video got X and actually got 23 million views of her choosing not to follow her dreams. And I hope she's not listening. Sorry. Come back and you can come on the Evie Cafe and sing. It's fine. But, you know, I think it is that simple, isn't it? Sometimes you've got to put the shoes on. And that is a beautiful analogy, that put your shoes on and get walking.
Yeah.
And Ash, thank you, because that is simple and is easy for any of us to do, to take the first step. And the first step of Mina led you to being bought out by All Star. And that in the startup world is the personification of success, isn't it? Being bought out by effectively your biggest competitor, really. The one that could have squashed you, but they went, no, actually, that is a really good idea. We need all that IP, that energy, that enthusiasm, that we need it to form part of our complete proposition. We've got the footprint, we've got the established, the trusted brand, and we can give you that. And it's collaboration. It's just simple. It's lovely, and I think it's just bloody brilliant.
And we think you're bloody brilliant, Ash. I think that people are going to really listen to this and take away a load of snippets. I wrote a few of them down as you spoke, but Paul's articulated it beautifully about that simplicity, that drive, that commitment, the discipline has been throughout this whole conversation and really true to you. It doesn't matter what you're doing or what stage of life or whether you're having a time that's hard or a time that's going well. It's still got that same discipline completely underlined. Mm. Take breaks, take lunch, look at your failures, look at your success, and just remember the worst that could happen is you could live at home with your parents. No. And actually, even the worst that could happen is you could end up working in a very hard hospitality industry and meet your wife. I mean, there's just good. There's good in everything that you've said here. And I really thank you for being so honest with us, as we always hope our guests are inspiring, honest, and successful. And as an entrepreneur, I am absolutely sure that you will be in the future with something else amazing that we don't see coming. You'll just find it. And we're very lucky to have you in this industry.
Oh, thank you. No, appreciate it. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, well, Ash, listen, we're the ones that are thankful. And, you know, to have a fail wall to be able to refer to just shows that actually you've been very, very successful. And we are very grateful for the insight that you've shared that can encourage us all today. I think, you know, the insight around All Star and what you guys provide for the whole charging solution, be it home, workplace, or on the hoof, is just brilliant. You've got, you know, such access, probably because of your trusted brand, to so many networks. It just makes life simple, and I'm sure you'll continue to go on that journey, both, you know, with the card and with apps and with other tools that make life simpler. Ash, thank you. Nod to All Star for sort of their support for the Evie Cafe. We really appreciate that. We're just privileged to have been able to share this with everybody today. And obviously, we've had lots of other conversations, and we do encourage you to go over. Now you've listened to this one, because this was the most important one, because this is the one we're talking to right now. Get over to theeviecafe.org, listen to the podcast there, follow Ash on LinkedIn, and, you know, follow his exploits. You look back at his history and do Google him, because there's lots of good stuff about him everywhere to find. And of course, link up with myself and with Sarah and with the rest of the Evie Cafe team. We're here to help. We're here to celebrate the great people of our industry. And today has been no exception. Ash Tate, thank you so much. Have a great day, everybody.